is going on out there, everybody? And thank you all again so very, very much for joining us here today on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And again, I'm not alone in here. I actually have the king of cranberry sauce, the trotter of turkeys, Sir Stuffs a Lot, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios after Thanksgiving. I had to burn off some calories, and so I got my exercise at Cider Cave. We went and celebrated Luke's birthday and Cam's birthday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
we
yeah.
were
oh,
lucky yeah. enough to get the hookup, y'all. One of our listeners heard us talking about Cidercade and actually came through. It was amazing. He called ahead. When I got there, I mentioned his name, and we were able to get all these free pizzas and free armbands. It was awesome. So we'd like to first and foremost thank Mr. Trevor McCain.
Yeah.
And his friend Abraham Rodriguez. Yes. Thank you very, very much. Y'all came through and got us the hookup. So it was an excellent time. Now, me and my wife had been there weeks ago to check the place out because I'd been hearing about it for over a year. And it's just been one of those deals where I never really, you know, your wife tells you about all kinds of places and you just kind of don't worry about it. And then coming up, Luke's birthday, we're like, well, what do you want to do? And Luke wanted to go to Dave and Buster's. It's a fortune because, you know, you got to prepay on these cards. And then Luke and his friends, when they get going wild, they'll scan the card and one of them finish the game before they're off to the next game.
Oh, yeah.
So I was expecting it to be pretty expensive. But then my wife was like, don't forget about this place I told you about where you pay a fee and you get in and it's unlimited and it's all these retro pinball an arcade game. So me and my wife went there a couple weeks ago, checked it out. We're like, this is the spot. We reserved the table. It was awesome. And then, of course, the listener heard us.
Yeah, I can't thank you guys enough. It was awesome.
Yeah, Abraham and Trevor, thank you very, very much.
Great.
It was awesome. So Cam came, a couple of friends that we played D&D with came. Of course, my whole family came, and a couple of Luke's buddies came. And it was a blast. If you're in the Fort Worth area, and I know they have more than one.
Yeah.
I think there's one in Dallas as well, and maybe somewhere else, but definitely the one in Fort Worth. It makes you feel like a kid, and it may not be, like, Luke may not appreciate it as much as somebody our age, because, like I was trying to explain to my teenagers, the console games at the day, in our day, they weren't that great. But if you wanted a real experience, you went to an arcade, and this is like going back in time. It's like going back to 1991. They had all the OG games, and I remember some of the games I forgot about till you see them there, and you're like, I remember that. How much time did I spend on Golden Axe?
Man.
You know, or...
It was just a good time all the way around. We played Kung Fu. I forgot about that game completely. Like you said to you, then you forget. It just moves left to right and you jump, you know, and that's about it. You're kicking at snakes, stuff like that.
And you saw Luke. He was running around like, he had a grin on and like he was sensory overload.
He lost his mind. Folks, if you're, I laughed and told Kyle, like if you're between the ages of like 35 and 55, this is your fun place.
Yeah,
this will remind you of things you've grown up with.
And it's a brilliant idea to put it right there by a big university, right?
Yeah. Great drinks, good ciders, good pizzas, just everything. It's just fun. Yeah. And they got pinball. I spent a lot of time playing pinball. You did too.
Yeah, I love pinball.
I wished I had one.
If I could choose between like an arcade or a pinball, like a man cave, if you will, I would definitely go with pinball first.
You think because there's like a tactile interaction where you're like physically interacting with the device?
Yeah, it's analog, right? Yeah. I like that.
I do too.
It's the getting away from digital. It's not that digital isn't awesome. Digital is amazing, but the analog feel to it.
Yeah.
I enjoy that better. Thinking of something I wouldn't enjoy, though.
Yeah.
What about black-eyed women, right?
Nope. Wait, what?
Yeah, check it out. It says, it was a Saturday night around 9 p.m. and no one was home. Everyone had gone out for dinner and I just stated to stay home as I felt a little nauseous. I was 8 months pregnant at the time and exhausted after having worked 10 hours. I was in my kitchen rummaging through the fridge for a light snack when someone came and knocked on my front door. Now, this surprised me because my family, they all have keys, so they would just open the door right up. Also, in my neighborhood, you know not to open the door unless you're expecting company. The knocking continued. I decided not to answer. I figured, well, they'll eventually go away, as no one would do solicitations or no one would just keep it up for unwanted company. But no, this person was persistent. The knocking continued. Now I was starting to get irritated, so I got up and went to the front door to look out the peephole, only to see a woman in her 50s just standing there staring down at my welcome mat. I thought. Seems harmless, I thought to myself, and stupidly, I opened the door. But the screen door was still locked and standing in between her and I. Awkwardly, she still hasn't looked up, and she hasn't said anything yet, so I ask, "Can I help you?" She stays quiet. Then, without any emotion, more like in a monotone voice, she asks if she can use my phone. I said I didn't have one, because I didn't seem like an emergency, and two, people snatch phones and run away in my city, so I was kind of paranoid. I wasn't going to give her my cell phone. She asked me again, this time more forcibly, to please use my phone, and then demanded by saying, "Let me in." And that is when she looked up at me. Her eyes, no joke, were solid black. She held eye contact with me, almost smirking. That's when I remembered the stories that I've read and heard about. All of the children. But here was an older lady with solid black eyes. The only way I can describe how she made me feel is that I felt threatened. I'd look away, but quickly look back right at her eyes. Something about them draws you into them. I tell her no. Then I demanded that she leave and begin to slowly close the door, and she practically screams, "Let me in!" Startled, I turn on the porch light, hoping to scare her away. What she does next confuses me to this day. She can clearly see me now, looks down at my pregnant tummy, turns around, and then walked away. That's it. No looking back, no nothing. I stood there dumbfounded. That was 3 years ago, and I haven't seen her since, and my child was born without incident. The mere presence of the black-eyed woman remains with me. Thanks for all you do. You. Wow.
Wow.
Creepy story, right? We hear this from time to time with the black-eyed kids mostly. But there have been incidents of black-eyed adults,
too. That's the black-eyed kid's mom.
Now, you know, people always say that, well, you can easily go to any convenience store, buy some black contacts, and pull pranks on people.
True.
And sure, you could. I mean, I wouldn't suggest doing it. It's a good way to get, you know, shot or at least a big Spartan, this is Sparta, front kick to the chest, a teep, if you will, you know. There's lots of things that can happen. And so I wouldn't recommend, if you're going to pull some pranks on people, doing that sort of thing. If you want to be a little bit mischievous, you know, get some toilet paper, throw it in some tree limbs or something like that. And, you know, take it easy.
Well, even when you do that, like, let's just say it is someone pulling a prank, right?
Yeah, right.
What was the point? If you're not going to follow through completely with whatever prank you're trying to pull, like, what's the point of just knocking on somebody's door to mess with them? If it's not been videoed, not been, you know, if there's not some gain, otherwise there's probably a nefarious reason. And that's why it always lends me to feel like it's some sort of dark fey presence that somehow gets some sort of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
I thought you was going to be talking about some goth girl, and then it turns out you're just talking about a creepy black-eyed woman.
That's correct.
Yeah. Some La Llorona just showed up on the front porch yelling. Brud, I got a little bit of this action here because it comes down from New Jersey lawn, because I love to hunt, love lawn. Look here, not deer encounter. Forward set eyes on multiple bucks in Morris County, New Jersey.
Yeah, I saw that, and I'm familiar with Morristown,
so
New Jersey.
So that's you're gonna cool. love it. And this was just last year, Morris County, New Jersey, early 2022. My friends and I were sitting in my car. The three of us had decided to pull over and chat, as it was late on a weeknight, and we had nothing to do but eat our Wendy's and enjoy each other's company. Now it's important to note that my car was not on, my lights were not on, my radio was not on, nor were any of the windows open. Suddenly, a deer appeared, almost out of thin air. I'd been looking in that direction the entire time. At the pond the deer appeared next to was very well lit. Now, my immediate thought upon seeing the deer was, "Skinwalker, get out." Now, of course, it might not have been one, but even just seeing the deer, I panicked. I had never been afraid of deer before, and before this moment, associated them with cherished moments as I spent with my grandpa during childhood. Well, I turned to my friends and told them, "There's a deer, and I think it's coming towards us." Now, I said this before it even began to approach the car. Now, the strange thing was, there was no reason for the deer to approach us at all. As I said earlier, we were not a disturbance, and the deer we spotted was alone. But more importantly, it was a male deer with no females or fawns within eyesight that it would even need to protect. The deer walked about 20 to 30 foot and stood about 10 feet from my vehicle. Now, at this point, my friends were a little spooked as well. I noticed the deer had one missing antler, and its eyes were odd and different. The eyes were forward set on its head and looking directly at us. It looked directly at me for around 30 seconds and then got into a charging position. When we tried to drive away, it started charging at my car, even chased us until the parking lot ended and became the road. Now, the strangest part was, as we drove away much further down the road, there were three other bucks just standing behind the curb in a domino-like formation. The third one in the sequence was missing the same antler as the deer we encountered earlier. They did not run into the street or off into the woods. They just stood there staring at us. I wonder if something was keeping them in that park, H. Now, I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
A lot of this sounds like normal deer behavior.
It does.
It's not out of the ordinary to have them run at your vehicle, especially during rutting time and things like you can watch elk run into vehicles.
No, I just saw an Instagram video. I was just talking to you about this the other day. Remember that buck just goes bailing off that retaining wall?
When they're in the rut, and they're also, whitetail seem to be more aggressive than other deer species, like highly aggressive.
I've seen whitetails attack elk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and mule deer. You watch a whitetail and a mule deer fight. Oh, my goodness. But just like that. I'm not saying it's not a not deer. The eyes are definitely strange if that was exactly what it was. But this isn't really out of the ordinary. Deer lined up, that's not really out of the ordinary.
No.
Who sends you pictures when we come back from D&D of them 35 or 40 just laying around and standing around in yards watching you drive by?
I like them lined up in my walk-in cooler.
That's how I like them, lined up when they're hanging in the cooler.
Yeah, no, very interesting. And that's another thing, you know, when it comes to these sightings, you're so right, is like, you know, when people have these encounters, whether it's not deer, whether it's Bigfoot, whether it's dog man, you know, it's like, how familiar are you with the woods, really? Like, sometimes things can look off, even to somebody who's trained. Like, we talk and joke about all the time on the show. I know exactly what deer and hogs look like, and I'll get confused by the same bush and the same stand week after week.
Where I'm like, oh, there's one.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, yeah, that's not one. Yeah,
it's not him.
And so, like, to somebody who's untrained, you know, how do you know they really?
Yeah.
I know they think they saw something. But and then again, I'm not to knock it off. It may have been a not deer. And not deer stories are just so weird to me.
Yes.
Speaking of weird, let's take a break. We got to pay some bills around here. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Guys, we are back. I kind of lightly alluded to this a little bit. Kyle and I discussed it, you know, a little, but we've been talking about this for a while, and we've touched base on this a few times in the past on the Monday shows, and we've done it off and on. I can't remember so much, but it was some stuff about the Giants, and it's Kyle's one of his favorite subjects, and he's drawn me into it the same way, and I love the tales of the Giants, but this isn't a normal tales of the Giants like we cover here, you know, that we're talking 8, 9, 10 footers and stuff. It's funny. Like we always say,
that's the average. It's like anything over 7 feet. I mean, which technically I guess is considered a giant, especially at the time, because during, at least here in North America, most of these were being discovered in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. Well, the average height of a man in the 1800s was very small.
What'd they say that the average height of the men in the Civil War was like 5'4"?
And I think the average weight was like 125, 130. I mean, they weren't big guys. This was before supplements. This is before we knew
decent food
that, you know, working out all the time did what it does. And the nutrition had a big deal to do with it.
Clean water.
So a 5'5", 125-pound man, when he sees a 7-foot skeleton, I mean, that is a giant. You know, nowadays people are like, 7 foot, it's not that impressive. But that was just some of them. And some of them are so fantastical that I don't even know. You know, that's when we always talk about having jumping off points.
Yeah,
this I don't is know it. What it is. But there are some really large specimens that have been claimed. And they're not just in one newspaper or one town. There's giant ones spotted all around the globe. It's very impressive.
Yes. Well, there's a story here. We're going to get into one. I had a few that we're going to talk about, of course, but there's one that was, it's a really unique thing. And I guess in order to start it off, here's the quote that gets everybody going. It has anything to do, of course, with any sort of Christianity or things, but this actually comes from the Bible. Genesis 6, verse 4, is there were giants in the earth in those days and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children with them. The same became mighty men, which were of old men of renown.
Mm.
And it doesn't make a lot of sense. And then, of course, they say that that leads into the Nephilim, and they talk about that the Nephilim were the half-breeds from the angels and the daughters of man.
Yeah, these giants were the watchers and stuff. Yeah.
There's all these crazy stories. Okay, you know, who knows? But when you start thinking about, like, what me and Kyle were talking about, there's fantastical stories of giants that are 20, even 30 feet tall. Human beings. You know, you've got to imagine a man built like Brock Lesnar, but he's 30 foot tall.
Yeah, right.
Like an enormous, scary. I mean, it wouldn't be any more terrifying than that if it's real, but it sounds too good to be real. So we're going to touch on a few things as we get to this story. One of these things comes from a mine, the Great Orm Mine in Wales. It was said that they had found a 60-pound sledgehammer. Like, basically said it was a 64. A 64-pound sledgehammer was found there. And they said in order for it to be used effectively, and I'm assuming they found the handle and all, but they said efficiently and effectively, an individual would have to be between 12 and 15 feet tall to use that hammer effectively.
That's incredible.
So let's just say a 64-pound sledgehammer with the handle and all that stuff. Could a man swing it? What if it was made for things other than what we picture it for? Then yes. If it was used like, you know, maybe you could only swing it a handful of times, but it was used for breaking a certain rock or doing, maybe it was used for something else. Maybe it was on some sort of primitive machine that it picked up and fell. Maybe it really wasn't used to be swung by hand. We don't know. So there are both sides of the coin. There even talk about that they're in Norfolk that they found what they said was a giant hand axe. Now, I don't know how they say they can actually say it was a hand axe. I guess they're going off the fact of maybe the size, maybe the way it was chiseled or carved or flaked or however it looked. Because when I give you the sizes of these things, they say it's 15 inches long at its greatest length. Well, that's not out of, you know, out of the ordinary crazy long as a rock, but that it was 6 inches wide and its greatest thickness was 5 inches and it weighed 14 pounds. Well, if that's not like a, that's a pretty good size little axe in any way that you carry it.
Yeah.
But mate, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how they were saying it was a hand axe.
I'm picturing like a hatchet. Yeah. You know,
a stone hatchet.
You know, because you split wood with a little hatchet.
Yes.
You don't have to use a full size axe.
Yes.
But that's still impressive.
You're very right. Yeah. And of course, like I said, it was made out of flint, so it was flaked in certain ways.
Napped
exactly for it to be that way. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was a two-handed scraper. Who knows what it was? There's all these different things, like we said, that we can always talk about. Apparently in the 16th century, a farmer in Denmark found an axe that was said to weigh twice as much as they weigh now, and over a foot long. So the people have talked about that. Now, there's all these, you hear these tales online, you hear all this stuff, you see all these pictures, and a lot of these pictures are a joke. Like, you can tell they're Photoshopped.
Obviously Photoshopped.
Yes, it's madness. Now, Kyle and I had covered a story about a human skeleton unearthed in Bulgaria. What they said was a huge skeleton is what they used in quotations, huge, in Varna, Bulgaria, near the Black Sea. Now, they said there's civilizations there that they believe go back as far as 7,000 years. And they claim that this skeleton that they unearthed belonged to a man that lived in the 4th or 5th century A.D. Now, what they don't do is they just say he was very tall. They said the bones are impressive and it belonged to a very tall man. And that is, now when they found him, this is the interesting part. That's where they found him they figured he had died while working during a ceremony, and that they had found him laying with his hands laid on his waist and his body was pointing to the east. That's his head, his feet to the west. So they could tell that he was buried because he was actually the orientation of which he was laid. I do remember doing some research in this, and it came up to exactly what you were talking about. He was only like 6.5 foot tall.
Right.
He wasn't a huge fella. We're not talking about an enormous monster of a man. So I got to looking into some interesting stories, and I wanted to find a real interesting story of some large skeleton that may have had something, let's say, some sort of conspiracy around it. Maybe somebody had seen it, or more than one person had seen it. Maybe, you know, maybe we could find something relatively new. And I come across this, and I want to touch on this before we get into that story. There's a town in Transylvania, Rosa, Montana, and that's actually in Romania. It's where it's at. That's where this story is going to start. And this comes from the BBC News. Several years ago, they actually did a little tale there that this town was going through some troubles. They were fighting not to open this gold mine there in a region. And basically, Romania, they said, is part of the European Union's poorest nations, really, and that unemployment is very high. And in the story that they're telling, in this article that they talk about, that they were a lot of people were excited because of foreign investors, and they wanted to reopen the town because they wanted to use the communist era mine. And it's the Rosa Montana Gold Corporation. And that was the company behind the project. Now, they said that at the time of this was happening a few years ago, that they believed it could bring the economy up in Romania around $19 billion. Just opening that up. Now, like, yeah. I said, it's a communist era mine. That plays a part into the story that I'm going to get into. Now, there was a fellow there named Soren Iaca. And he actually started the cultural foundation there in Romania. And he said, if this project starts, it's life over for me, is what he said. He said, I would lose my house. I would lose the graves of my parents. I'd lose the church and the heritage that belongs to all of us. He went on to say that the mining industry is very dirty. They would use tons of dynamite each day. With the noise and the toxicity of what's going on here, life is going to be impossible. Now, there's a fellow name, and his shows up there, and he is actually the mine's, like, main man that comes and does a little talk there, and he's got the greatest name, Dragos Tanasi.
Mm.
And he said that Romania has a huge chance with mining, and if we really develop this industry, we can develop tens of thousands of jobs in areas like Rosa, Montana. He said, let me tell you this, if the mine doesn't start, this village is going to die. So I tell you that because I get into this. Like I said, it's communist era mines. We got these big mining companies wanting to reopen the mining in there. I give you those threads because I want to give you those threads because it ties into this story. Now, this is some stories. It's hard to vet a lot of this. So before anybody starts messaging on me on Facebook and the show on Facebook or sending us emails and all that, we're not standing behind any of this. We have no idea if this is even remotely close. You can find some cool things on there. Steve Quayle has a cool website, Genesis 6 Giants. He covers some of it. There's a lot of other websites that you can go and look at spots. It's going to tell you about this, about this Rosa Montana giant. The story goes that back in 2012, in February, that there was a team of geologists, some Romanian and some Canadians, and that they were there looking into the gold veins in that area, I'm assuming to go along with this mine wanting to open up. And that they believe that some of these gold veins went as far back as 5,500 years ago in the geology that they were studying. And they kind of come across something that was pretty interesting. They found at the base of this rectangular stone there that they said what they all thought at the time was natural rock. But they took some samples and they took that stone back to the lab. And it showed that this stone was composite. And they said what was even strange was the mixture, that the mixture of this stone was 30% tungsten, 15% granite powder, and 55% powdered 50-carat gold.
So how is that possible?
It had to be made.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's not a natural occurring event.
They said that the technology right now, as they had it then, it was impossible to reproduce these conditions. That they don't know how it could, like you're saying, I guess in nature, they're like, this couldn't have formed in nature the way it formed. Somebody had to do something with that.
They were creating this giant ingot.
Or it could be a tombstone. And the reason I tell you that is because this is where the story leads.
Do tell.
Now, there's a thing there that was found that it's actually been reported on that slab that it was called the Hyperborean Gallery. And it was investigated, if you want to call it that, several years ago. And there was a fella there that was took part of this whole mining excavation and things. And the story goes that he was actually taken from his home. There was people that were beaten that had lived there, and that there was a lot of the people were killed, or a lot of people died due to illnesses that were around the mine whenever they were doing some mining back in the 70s. All right. Well, there was one of these old fellas named John Moses, and he was a team leader in that area. And he decided to tell his story a few years ago. And this is what he says. He said, "Maybe I should not say anything, but I swore that only to the communists, so I'm going to go ahead and tell this story." He says, "So here it is." Now, of course, we're going to be doing some paraphrasing things. It's, you know, that's all gone through some, you got to go back and forth with some interpretation and stuff. But this is how it breaks down. It's, I'm going to pile it together as best I can to let it flow for you. "In the winter of 75, I was called by the chief engineer and told to make available, enhance, and electrify, and prepare to reopen the old Gallery 13 mine, which had remained closed for quite some time, and that he was coming and bringing two geologists with him. So I worked on that and got the electrification work ready, and it had lasted up until the summer of 76, and I had some problems with water draining in part of the gallery that was flooded. Well, we had some mine pumps and some solenoid valve pumps, and we got it pumped down. It was very helpful. But also, during that time, I found a bone beneath the water. It was so great that it was twice as big as normal. And after I showed the director, he handed me and it over to the Rosia, Montana State Mining Company security. And I was questioned by their prosecutor for about 4 days. Now, the questions were, where was the bone found and when? In what position? Who was with me in the mine? Who knows of its existence? All kinds of puzzling questions to scare the hell out of us and make us silent. We all were obviously silent, and after we were questioned, we had to sign statements, and then we were sent back to the gallery. Now, even at home, I never breathed a word. I was afraid for my family. When our job was finished, two men entered the mine in Bucharest, and one of which was definitely a geologist. Why they were there, we did not know. And after a week, a third, and very young man, with a scar on his left eye, which said he was an archaeologist, showed up. 2 days after he came, a whole team of civilians and some archaeologists with some strange equipment, along with a crew of militia, that blocked the access to the Gallery 13 and started to control the site and issue paperwork at the gates. After a month and a half, I was called upon again. I and my friends, who were with me when the first bone was found and had already signed statements, began to haul things from the bottom of Manifold 13 and get the cars out of the mine. It's when I saw it. It's when I saw the horror. Archaeologists had dug out of the rock a giant skeleton about 10 meters long, lying on one side with its legs raised. The bone I had found was there and tied with a red ribbon, and only when I saw it, I realized it was actually a vertebrae. Civilians were leaping up and down. Some of the archaeologists were writing something, others taking pictures with flashes. Dasunia was their lawyer and the historian and part of the security. And he and another, the younger archaeologist that I had recognized after the scar, were yelling. The young man was yelling, "The Hyperborean Skeletor could even be our father." One oily-skinned man with a heavy Russian accent sounded, "Man is descended from monkeys. Where have you ever heard monkeys 10 meters long? Ready this. Pack this. This skeleton must go to Moscow." Two of the security jumped on him, bound him, and drug him out of the mine. They turned to us and said, "Come here. Titan, pack in these crates and take it to the station. And if anyone breathes a word, you'll have your neck broke." All of us fell in, quiet, close together, and went to work. It was morning when we finished packing, carrying, and climbed the crates up and out to the train. But we weren't released to go home. we were loaded up into two vans without windows, and they took us somewhere. I don't know. I do know that I was starved about a week, and that got me to sign that I had never seen anything, and I know nothing. And because I have a bandit uncle who was part of the Legionnaire Scouts in the mountains, and I was told that if I was to breathe a word, that those type of people would come after my wife and my children, put me in jail. So I signed, and I've been silent. What else would I have to do? Something good happened to me afterwards, though. A week after I returned to the mine, it had always been on my mind, an evening at the pub, a friend came and sat at the table. But to be honest, when I saw him, my blood froze. He said, "Look, John, I'm the same blood as you, and also like you, generations of my people were at the Roses, Montana Mountains. I was there when they discovered the giant skeleton. Now it's in Moscow, and I, like you, saw it. Take this envelope and keep it to yourself. Inside is the picture. Let me know if there are any more skeletons in the Hyperborean Gallery. They are ancestors of ours. Keep that picture. Show it to your grandchildren." I told him I couldn't take it because I was scared. He said that I'd better be scared, but that he and the other security man don't scare so easy. He took it and got up and left, and I've never seen him again. I often wonder what happened to him. That's the story that this old man tells, that he's dealt with this 30-foot giant and the things that he had gone through. But that's not where this thing ends. Because we go back to, like I told you, about the tombstone. There was some more analyzation done to this tombstone, or what they call it. Now, when I tell you this, this block that they were talking about that they dug under and they found this was actually 19 feet wide, 39 feet long, and 9 feet tall. It weighed almost 1,700 tons and contained around 900 tons of gold. Yeah. Get a load of that. Once it was all dug out, that giant block that was had all that inside of it.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Now, the last thing that they've known about all this, they said, now, to make a comparison, the amount of work that would have required to get that quantity of gold would have been about 20 years of mining work.
For normal-sized humans.
For normal-sized people that was in that block, exactly. The last thing that you can find that talks about this tombstone or this gravestone is that they believe that it was cut up into what some have said 80 sections, 80 smaller pieces for transportation. Now, nobody knows where it went. Now, there were some other archaeologists working in that area claimed that there were some photos taken and they were sent to a paleolinguist and that the paleolinguist was going over it. And he said that it was an unknown writing, that he couldn't really make it out. So you really don't know what it, you know, ended up being, you know, saying or anything. But there's notice that there was an emerald green relief writing on it. That's why it was sent to him. And, of course, the text on it was written in three parallel rows that was on some of that stone. So you know that it wasn't just, like we said, it's not accidental. Something was carved in there. And that they started in the upper left. And from there, the writing descended diagonally. They said similar to that of a serpent, and that it formed a spiral around a wolf's head and then ended. So there was a carving, some reliefs, and then there was writing around all this thing. Makes you think just like what? A tombstone.
Yeah.
Writing around the tombstone. And then in this cavern, they find a 30-foot man.
Wow.
Right?
I've never heard of this story.
It's crazy. I know. And like I said, look, I have no idea if any of this shit is true. I have no clue.
Yeah, but when you say that, I mean, I agree with you. Lots of things on the show that we discuss.
Exactly.
There's no way that we can prove that it's real or not. We don't try to. This isn't a show to try to prove that things are real.
No.
You know, we'll never say that this is expanded perspectives. We uncover the truth. We find interesting and neat stories.
Yes.
We discuss them. It's fun to tell them. It's fun to contemplate them. And you should do your own research, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it when you tell the story. To me, the old man telling this story, whether it really happened or not, it makes you wonder, because I know that, you know, I was looking up things on the internet about these giants in Romania while you're telling the story, and there are numerous accounts that cite this.
Yes.
That this really happened. And I'm not talking about, like, the Onion and stuff. I'm talking about, like, you know, Ancient Origin stuff is a pretty realistic, pretty legit website. They even mention it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so Is it possible? I know that in the United States, I'm not too familiar with giants from all over the world, but I am pretty familiar with the ones in North America. I've been studying it and researching it for years, and I know for a fact that there's well over 1,000 accounts of 7 foot and taller skeletons that have been reported that have been unearthed from these ancient burial sites for the last 200 years in North America. There's newspaper accounts, there's county histories, there's letters, there's scientific journals, diaries, photos, and even the Smithsonian has, you know, identified at least 17 skeletons that stood over 8 foot tall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these have been found coast to coast. They've been found in every state. There's common things that happens with them. Double rows of teeth, jaw bones that are so large they can fit over the face of the finder, even elongated skulls. And you find the jewelry, these copper crowns, these actual dirks, daggers, swords. There's all these stories. And then, of course, when you take the biblical account, like you're talking about, the watchers descended, and they came into the daughters of men and were born, these Nephilim. Is that, you know, of course, a lot of the stories in the Bible are exaggerated, but is there some root truth to it? I mean, we already know that the Hobbit exists. We found it. We know all these stories of Sasquatch. You know, they're very tall most of the time. They talk about them looking like wild men. Are these wild Sasquatches that people have seen, whatever it is, Yowies, wherever you're at, the Almasti, these 8-9 footers, and then hunters talk about how they look human. Are these some kind of outlying remnants of a giant race? I mean, the legend of the Lovelock Cave, where the American Indians, the Native Americans, they talk about this giant race of giants, I'm sorry, that were here before they were here.
And they're not the only ones. There's numerous tribes
and,
that talk about it.
And they would fight with them, and they would battle with them. And lots of times they would find these giant skeletons with normal, like, human
buried
wives.
With normal wives, yeah.
Buried with them, right. So, like, if you were a giant, you were worshipped. You were a king. Mm-hmm. You were perceived to have some kind of otherworldly power. This was perhaps going on all over the world. Are these real? Is it possible? Like, 8-9 feet, you can wrap your head around. 10 meters, that's nearly 33 feet. You're not going to mistake that. Like, you might, you know, not know how to do the correct measurements, like when you're, you know, scoring a deer's antlers or something. You can make a mistake. But you're not going to make a mistake that big. Not 10 meters.
That's true.
You know, I mean, how enormous must the skull be?
Yeah.
I know in a lot of the cases of the North American giants, the average circumference of a human skull is around 20 inches. A lot of the ones they found are 36, up to even 40, 44.
What would that be on a 30-foot tall man?
Who knows?
You'd have to do the math of what the average height to the average height of a human body and get that down and then add that to it. Well, this isn't even where it starts. It's still crazier than this.
Man.
It gets wilder. They said during the excavation of this gravestone, or what they said, this tombstone, that they lifted it, of course, to take it with them, and that they said underneath it was a 4-meter, a 13-foot diameter pit that had a spiral staircase cut into it. And they said the stairs were cut so good that it looked like it had been done with a laser. That's how perfect they were, that it spiraled down. They couldn't figure out how it was cut. They even said that there was somewhat of an eerie glow, like a colored glow in there, that nobody could find out where the light was coming from. The army in that area freaked after they did that, and they sealed the pit with cement to Gallery 13. And they said that those present have never talked about it again. And that they had to sign confidentiality agreements, you know, signing paperwork. So nobody knows what lies there. Nobody even knows if the stairway is real, because it's apparently been filled in. So nobody knows where it leads, anything. I'm picturing this. I'm picturing the other big men walked and put their king or whatever that was to rest. They came back up that stairway, slid that big tomb cover in place, and then left.
And what kind of a crane, medieval crane or so, would you have to even move a piece of?
You wouldn't if you were 30 foot tall.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, look at what a human being can squat. The big, strong guys can squat. Now imagine a 30 footer.
That's
four or five of
course, them. I know you don't know. You're trying to picture in your mind.
Yes.
Were there only a few giants and then mostly humans that worshiped these giants? Or was there like a whole village of the giants?
I picture a whole village.
I'm picturing of what's the Game of Thrones. Remember where they had the giants up there?
That's why I picture a whole village, because they talk about them being the oldest of their kind and the only ones left, that they were a whole bunch of them. Maybe they lived longer than us. Who knows? But that's not really where it stops, because in Romania, you know, there's legends of giants there too, large giants, that they actually believed that the giants there were known as different names as Tartars.
Mm.
They called them the Tartars there. And there's even been this. There's even been some local areas that there's some people in Romania that went to plant some apple trees on a hill.
Yeah.
Uncovered an almost eight and a half foot tall skeleton
mm-hmm.
out of that area there. They talk about some giants in that area, and a giant named Novak, of a man there that actually, that wasn't the giant's name, but Novak was the man, was a hero that fought the giants there in that area.
Really?
And they say that where he fell or whatever, that there was a mark on the ground, and there's lots of areas that were believed to have been built by giants. There's also a story goes that there was a period of in this area, and I can't pronounce these names to save my life, but that they was between the years of 1940 and 1950, that they said that archaeologists unearthed 80 humanoid skeletons, which appeared to be giants, and that these giants measured between 4 and 5 meters in height. So 13 to 16 feet is what they believe that these things were actually, their live height would have been in these areas of Romania.
Man.
Now, how crazy is that, right? Now, this is another thing, apparently. I don't know if this is in, Lombard, it says, but that there were some giant skeletons unearthed in this area in 1989. It said 20 of them were found. So I don't know if it's easier to, if they're found over there, when I say over there, overseas somewhere. Let's say that they're found in Romania or whatnot. Does nothing ever get said of them? Do people just get rid of them and that's it? Or is there some in a private collection? Is there some somewhere stored away in these countries like this that are maybe not as advanced as other countries, or they are advanced in certain ways, but also, too, that they keep it quiet? Because just like that man said, the other fellow talked to him, those are our family. Those are our ancestors. Maybe they believe that they're tied in with them. Hell, maybe they are our ancestors, and maybe that, like we talked about, maybe there was something different in the atmosphere that allowed people to be bigger back then. Can you imagine? Just throw the idea of 30 footers out. 15 foot tall man.
Yeah, that's still incredibly huge, right?
Hell, a 9 foot tall man.
Yeah.
Is you look at Shaquille O'Neal. Now imagine you walked into a group, and when you show up to a party, everybody there is his same size. Men and women are his size, and you're just a normal dude.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how crazy is that going to be? Now you got to take it and double his height.
What's the tallest guy you've ever stood next to?
7'2".
As I say, I think I stood next to a guy that was around 7'3", and it really is impressive.
He came into the archery shop when I worked in there.
Oh, God. What's his draw?
He was 24 years old.
Oh, my God.
He came in to see if we could custom order him a bow. A Matthews is what he wanted. And I was like, yeah, I don't know, because we put everything on him, and it was over 34 inches. I mean, he would draw, and it's just like a little, I'm like, can you imagine how fast that bow would have been? Because was it Karl Malone? I know Matthews built a bow for one of the basketball players. I forgot who it was. Custom built it where he could shoot it. And it was like the draw length is 36 or something. But you also got to think about arrow spine. You got to start talking about crazy stuff then. But could you imagine 7'2" was how I couldn't. He walked up and opened the door and like ducked down to come in. And I'm standing there. And here's the thing. It wasn't like he was a crippled kid. It wasn't. I mean, this kid was huge. And he was from, where was he from? He wasn't from here in Texas. I forgot where he was at, but he was down here for some reason. Because I asked him, and he's like, I'm 7'2". And he was like wearing like regular sneakers. I could only imagine if you like put... He was huge. He was enormous.
Man. Well, you know, the reason I ask is because, you know, the current tallest man in the world, I think, is 8'3", something like that.
Holy moly.
So, I mean, and, you know, Robert Wadlow. Everybody knows Robert Wadlow. He's the tallest man ever record, you know, at the Guinness Records and stuff. And he was 8'11". So it is possible. Now, of course, he had a condition. He died very early because...
Was he 23, I think, wasn't
something.
He?
I don't remember the exact age, but he died early because he had like something on a pituitary gland or something.
Yeah.
But so we know that it's possible.
Yes.
He had a real hard time walking.
Yes.
I'm picturing a person that does not have a problem. There's no condition. He can walk. He can fight.
He's healthy.
He can 9 foot tall. And then like you're talking about 15 foot tall. I mean, that's incredible. 16 feet is like the average overpass on like an interstate. So imagine something that tall being a human with armor on.
Well, see, that's what I keep running through my mind is I keep thinking back to the Vikings. And I keep thinking of like the old romantic idea of the Vikings, like from the cartoon How to Train Your Dragon, where they got the big mustaches, the big beards, the long bearded hair, chest plates. I picture a guy like that, but he's 15 feet tall. He's swinging a sword that's like 12 foot long. You know, it's damn near as long as he is.
What if you're another tribe and you're going to war and you agree, okay, I know, we're going to go to war, and you meet on the battlefield, then you're like, what the hell is that?
Who you brought with you, homie? Yeah. And there's like three of them standing back there holding hands propped up on the pommel of their sword. Like, what you looking at, bitch? And you're like, I'll let you have whatever you want as long as you don't let those guys come over here. Ugh. The sheer factor of the shock and fear alone would win you that fight.
Yeah.
What could it be? Are all these, look.
Tall tales.
Are all of these hoaxes, like we've said before, and it drives me nuts, because this to me should be something you could easily figure out. You should easily be able to find, unless there is an active cover-up on it. And even to think
and
that
people want to say,
insane.
Why would they cover it up? I don't know.
I don't know.
I know that here in North America, a lot of the giant skeletons that were on display have been removed and repatriated mm-hmm. through the NAGPRA, which is mm-hmm. the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act.
Mm-hmm.
That's the excuse here, is they returned all of them. That's why you don't see them now. You can't see them now because they've been returned. And I heard that the cover-up here in North America is, of course, Manifest Destiny. They didn't want everybody to know that these things existed. They didn't want to know that the Native Americans lived. There was as many here as there was.
Yes.
So that we could take over the land, you know, whatever. As far as the other parts of the world, I don't really know. I mean, there are famous explorers, Ferdinand Magellan and guys mm-hmm. like that, that claim that when they were off the coast of Argentina, they saw giants. There's a couple other that slips my mind right now. But these, you know, these have been seen all over. So you're telling me that all of these are hoaxes? These great explorers, they made it up. These farmers that are just out tilling their field, they find this giant mound. They're making it up.
Yeah.
These archaeologists and these treasure hunters from Moscow that are in Romania or wherever, they're making it up. Certainly not everybody's making it up. And not just now, but for the last, say, 400 years is making it up, including stories in the Bible. They're making it up.
Yeah, you're telling me everybody's made it up.
I can't believe that. It's just like the UFOs. I've never seen a UFO. I've never had an alien enter my room. But certainly with all of the stories and all of the sightings and all of the eyewitnesses, certainly some of them are unexplained flying objects, right?
I would think so, yes.
So I think it's the same with this. Well, I mean, what do you think?
I'm with you. Is there's way too much there for this not to be something to it. There's way too much information, like we said. And we said it before, and I know we're beating a dead horse, but when you start talking about these guys that unearthed this stuff, and they're like, well, they just didn't lay it out right, you know, and I'm like, how could you not lay out a skeleton so wrong, so many gaps in the bones that you could take a 5 foot, 5.5 foot, 6 foot man and make him 12 foot tall without going, move that shit back where it belongs?
Yeah, that's what I don't believe that. I just don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's, well, but I don't, here's the thing. The 30-footer. And like we said, there's other accounts of large giants found like that.
Well, a 30-footer just is like femur would have to be taller than you.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
You wouldn't have to worry about stretching them out when they're measuring them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Very interesting, folks. You should check them out yourself. There's an awful lot of interesting books on the matter. I recently read the book Giants on Record by Jim Vieira and Hugh Newman. Pretty interesting book. Also, Richard Dewhurst has a pretty interesting book. And Patrick Cohenard. I'll put all those in the show notes. Let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. With Expanded Perspectives.
Pow.
I love stories of giants.
Dude, who doesn't?
In the beginning of the show, I was talking about the black-eyed woman that showed up. Well, yes. I've got another one about a black-eyed kid, and this comes from a young American who was in South Africa training for the Peace Corps.
Nice.
When he noticed two small boys next door, and then later he kind of realized that one of them had solid black eyes. It says this happened back in 2011 when I was in training for Peace Corps service in Cape Town, South Africa. Most houses here have bars on the doors and windows and are surrounded by gates and fences. The village that I trained in was large and sprawling. My host family was wealthier than most, and while the house was super nice, most neighbors had much simpler dwellings, and even some had tin shacks.
Our fence was tall and stable, with a thick wall and a gate, and some of the neighboring fences were small barbed wire ones. The training schedule was packed, and I was usually gone all day, every day. When I got home in the afternoon, I would often play with some neighborhood kids. Sundays were my only day off. And on one particular Sunday, towards the end of training, I was home alone. I was outside, hanging laundry, and noticed two small boys. They looked about 7 or 8 years old or so, in the next yard, staring at me. Now, I'm white, and I'm used to this reaction. I'd never seen these kids before. I smiled at them and continued to hang my laundry. They continued to play and stare at me. My unease with these kids now grew, and I thought it was because I was annoyed with being stared at, but the longer they watched me, the more creeped out I felt. I looked up to notice that they were gone. I quickly went inside and locked the door behind me. The gate was already locked, and there was a small, tall fence surrounding the property. I looked out the window of my bedroom a few minutes later to see one of the kids scaling that fence. I thought about going out there to say something, but felt compelled to stay inside and just try to ignore them. The next time I looked, the kid had just landed in the yard, and somehow he saw me through the sliver of window I was peering out of and made direct eye contact with me. Then I noticed that this kid had eyes that were solid black. I felt like he was reaching into me and grabbing my insides. The kid prowled around the windows and doors for a while, I'm assuming looking for a way to get in. I don't know what happened to the other kid, but by that time, I was totally creeped out. I moved to my permanent site shortly after that, and sorry, but that's all the story I have. Thanks for all you do, Aaron.
Yikes.
So they were coming for him. You know, oof. And that's a common feeling that people experience when they have these encounters with the black-eyed kids, mm-hmm. is they feel like it's like staring at their soul, right?
That's your gut telling you you're in danger.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Scary place. Scary encounters.
The whole black-eyed kid thing is still so wild.
It is because, you know, we know that it was, you know, it started out as a creepypasta kind of thing.
Yeah. But it's almost like it's breathed life into itself.
I believe the first happening, I think the first sighting reportedly, you know, the fake one happened in Abilene, Texas. I believe that's true, but I could be wrong. But it has taken on a life of its own, and people have reported seeing this stuff all over.
So it
does make you wonder.
Disturbing.
Is it Tulpa-like? Like this is a thought form that the collective mind of the hive mentality has created? Or, you know, is it a real thing, a phenomenon? For whatever reason, these demons are possessing children.
I like to think of it like this, that whatever evil darkness, whatever we're dealing with all of this dark stuff, can take notice in people's feelings. And it's almost like it's sensed, like it's watching the numbers and like, oh, well, this black-eyed kid story, people really seem unnerved by it. We're going to start taking on those shapes. We're going to start using those forms because this seems to get the biggest reaction, kind of like Monsters, Inc.
Right.
What gets it's screams. Turns out laughs are better, but, you know, they're harvesting screams in Monsters, Inc. So maybe that's what it is, something along those crazy lines. Get a load of this. I liked this for where it's going to go. Most of y'all, some of y'all might even know, Sarah forwarded this to me, and I want to read this to y'all. It says, I'm mainly looking for help identifying what creature my cousin may have come in contact with in this following story. I've grown up with stories about skinwalkers, but we both live on the East Coast and the connection seems unlikely. So the story is as follows. Alan was returning home late one night after visiting his girlfriend at her house. Now he lives down a long stretch of road that, while in a growingly suburban area, is still very well forested. His house is at the end of the long road, across from a pasture that includes horses and one hog. As Alan was driving towards his home, he became aware of a large white mist that was floating in the air over the pasture area. So Alan stopped his vehicle and watched as the mist, seemingly now aware of his presence, began to hover and then abruptly dart down toward the earth. Alan was baffled at what he saw, and the situation escalated when he realized that on the ground, directly where the mist darted and disappeared, now sat a rabbit. Alan said it was as if the mist entered the rabbit. And apparently after seeing the rabbit, Alan floors it all the way back down the driveway, gets up into his house, of course, decides to stay in for the evening. They're asking if it was whether a skinwalker, what this thing might be. They posted that after speaking with members of the local indigenous community, that we discovered that rabbits have an association with the little people in their culture. And after talking it over with Alan, it seems like this could be a very good fit.
Wow.
So, you remember how we talked not long ago about these mists, right? The mists, the fogs we discussed.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's not uncommon to see it. So how easy would it be for, if it is Fae, for it to be hiding like that in the mist? That it just, it's mist, and then it can become, whether it's a real form, you know, a physical form, what it is he didn't report because he didn't try to touch it. Right? It had some sort of mind effect on him. But no, it was just one of those things. It can morph like Fae because it's an all-natural thing.
It makes me wonder, do you think the Fae are controlling the mist or are they lie dormant like mushrooms and when the mist gets dewy or really rainy or wet, then they kind of can use it for their benefit.
Be awesome.
You know what I mean?
I think they just have the ability to use it as they see fit because it is, in my interpretation of the Fae, they're very natural, right? So it's almost like they're all druids.
Okay? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So they would easily be able to use it in what I would think. Now, I don't know that they control it, but it's just like we don't control the rising and the setting of the sun, but we can take advantage of sneaking around in the dark.
That's a good point.
Kind of the way I feel like the way that they can do it.
I got that rabbit Peter that hangs out by my pop-up stand. I see him almost every evening.
Well, one of his friends, it might even be him, has showed up at mine and hand to the sky, it is the loudest eating rabbit I have ever heard. I'm 20 yards away. This thing sounds like it is in the middle of Golden Corral and it hadn't eaten in a week. It's just, this rabbit is going hard in there.
Yeah, it might be Peter.
He's getting fat.
Yeah, he's big. He's a good one.
Man, I'm just going to have to, I don't want the coyotes to get him, but I want him to stay there because I enjoy watching him. So I'm hoping that when those coyotes, if they come back around, then they're going to be in real trouble. They mess around with my rabbit.
You know, I was just talking to you the other day when we were at Cidercade. This year has been the year that I've seen or heard the least amount of coyotes ever. But then you were telling me that the neighbor's property, they've been seeing a large mountain lion over there.
Yeah, they got a picture of one. Yeah. So,
maybe that's why you don't hear the coyotes.
One could only hope.
Because I remember there was times in years gone by where, like, I was actually kind of nervous about getting out of the stand and walking back to the truck because I could tell they're clearly between me and the truck.
Yeah. What's funny is how fast they cleaned up the dough that I had left, what was left over after we'd finished processing her that I'd had there, how fast they took care of that. But like I told you, but yet we still don't hear them.
I sent you the picture. Like it was less than 24 hours, and I don't know what happened to the head.
Yeah, no.
It was gone.
Yeah.
I mean, every morsel clean. The bones were white like they'd been bleached, and they'd only been out there like 18 hours.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
It was very, Mother Nature's cleanup crew was batting 1,000 that night.
Right.
But like I said, but we never saw them.
I know.
We don't see them like we used to. I used to have them run past the stands. Remember, I used to tell you all the time, like, they're all over here. They just dart past you in the middle of the day. I haven't seen one. I haven't heard one, although I've got a picture on a game camera of a very pretty one.
I've seen tracks, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Coming up, we have a pretty cool interview with the guys from Belief Hole Podcast. Jeremy and Chris and John had us on, and that's going to be premiering next week sometime, and it'll be premiering here on our show next week as well. But it was a very fun time. We kind of cross-promoted each other and shared stories. So we played some of our stories on their show, and they played some of their show stories on our show, and we did a collaboration episode where we're just going to drop that together instead of two separate shows.
Yeah.
We're just going to drop the one. They are very cool guys. It was so nice to meet them. They actually hit us up months ago. I want to say almost a year ago, if not a year ago. And we're trying to have us on, and we just always had a conflict with schedules. And then we moved studios, and then they moved studios. And
So we were finally able to get on, and it was a really fun time. If you're not familiar with Belief Hole, go check them out, whether on Spotify, iTunes, however you listen, or you can even do it on YouTube. And that's another thing, folks. We have a YouTube channel. I don't know how you listen to this. I know some people listen on YouTube, some people on Spotify, some people on iHeartRadio, wherever you're at. If you want to help us out, it really helps us is to go on platforms, even though you may not listen to us there. So you can go over to YouTube, like and subscribe, and it doesn't cost you a dime, and it really helps us out.
Yeah.
You know, I know people are gracious by giving us hookups to Cidercade and sending
us
gifts.
Big ups to Trevor and Abraham.
And Abraham, absolutely.
You guys are the bomb.
You made Luke's birthday.
And mine.
He really loved it. But like, you know, we get things all the time, but I'm telling you, sometimes the best way to help us out is just to go support us on different platforms. Like write us a review somewhere. Yeah. Give us the 5 stars. You know, subscribe.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends on YouTube and stuff.
Tell people you don't like.
Yeah, tell people you don't like. Yeah, that's right. If you have any cool stories.
Tell the people that you don't like. You're like, you need to listen to these guys.
If you have any cool stories you want to share with me and Cam and the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can also call the show, 888-393-2783. Let's not forget about our sponsor, Lumi Labs and Microdose. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, just do a quick search online or go to microdose.com and use the promo code EXPANDED, that's EXPANDED, to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. And First Leaf, to give your palate what it really wants, you need First Leaf. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/expanded to sign up, and you'll get your first 6 hand-curated bottles for just $44.95. That's tryfirstleaf.com/expanded. That's about all the time we have for this episode. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
I have no idea what we got. We're going to go roll some dice as soon as we get done with this. And then, I don't know, we're going to see what's popping off with all the fun for my birthday, whatever my family's got planned up for that. We're going to go eat or go do something crazy.
Yeah, that's right. You'll be a year older.
I'll Happy be a birthday. Year older. Thank you, sir.
All right, folks. Till next time. Be safe, be careful. I'm Kyle, he's Cam.
Peace, y'all.